Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good. I was momentarily distracted because my two cats are brawling with each other.
Oh, yeah.
Showing considerably more fight than the Oilers did tonight. The Oilers lost 3-2 in a game that was 3-0 until the final 2 minutes of the game when the Oilers got 2 6-on-5 goals. The Oilers actually, I think, outchanced Toronto when it came to grade eight chances. Let me just
14-12 is what I got.
Okay. Yeah. So not a terrible night from the Oilers, but a really disappointing one because they had a chance to make up 2 points in a playoff race that they're almost out of, and they failed to do so. It was disappointing. Mikko Koskinen was sick, so he couldn't play. And that's a real kick in the shins for a team fighting like crazy to make the playoffs. Anthony Stolarz came in, and he played a pretty good game. But he did get outplayed by Freddie Anderson in this game. And he also let in one goal I thought that I didn't like a whole lot. The first goal that was from the point deflected in the circle. I thought he should have had that with better positioning or better athleticism or whatever. Just stop that shot. Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that the Oilers didn't get shut out. And that, it sounds fatalistic, but it sure felt and tasted like a shutout deep into the third period. This against the Toronto team that has shut out Edmonton 2 times in the previous 3 seasons, including the immortal Garrett Sparks shutting us out in his first NHL game, and then career backup Curtis McElhinney shutting him out 1-0 last season.
Or is there something tinkling? What is tinkling there?
Oh, it's my dog eating her dinner again.
Oh, okay. That's okay. We know what it is.
It's her tag clinking against the porcelain food bowl.
So, good stuff.
Anyway, yeah. And it felt like another shutout. I mean, Freddie Anderson was hot. He was lucky. I mean, he had one shot. Adam Larson seemed to have him dead to rights, beat him, looked clean, hit the knob of his stick. Another one hit him in the head. You know, there were shots that were, you know, looked like sure goals, and somehow they'd either just go wide or some defenseman would get in the way of him. And it just, and to the Oilers' credit, I mean, down 3-0 and basically playing one or two lines against three or four, they kept coming on, and they actually poured it on down the stretch of the third period, and after unfortunately wasting a 5-on-3 opportunity to get back in the game, they did score not once but twice in the 6-on-5 situation, and damn near pulled off the Anaheim hat trick with a great Zach Cassian chance with 30 seconds left. Honestly, David, in my life, I've only once seen a team score 3 goals with the goalie pulled to tie a game, and that was Anaheim in Game 5. 2017. I guess we just needed Ryan Kessler to grab Anderson's pad so we could have tied it up, eh?
Cassian was so that was almost the best scoring chance of the game for the Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, I mean, Nuge got a quick shot off that caught the goalie, and Klefbom's shot was, that was a pretty good scoring chance. He has a wide open net to put that in. But Cassian, he just in tight, steaming down the middle, moving fast. That is a shot that's going to go in probably 1/3 of the time, if not 40% of the time. So that's like a, not a grade A chance, that's a triple A chance. And it would have been fantastic.
Oh, it would have ever been to somehow pull a miracle point with the chance of a second out of that game. Because, I mean, the Oilers were behind the eight ball, you know, really for most of the final 2 periods once Toronto got the lead.
And Zach Cassian is my good thing, Bruce, for segue there.
Yep.
He's just looking good on that top line. You know, when I think about the Oilers' needs for the top line, you know, they're going to need some more forwards in the top lines. So they have McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins for next year. And can Sam Gagner do it? I don't know. But Zach Cassian looks like he might be able to. Zach Cassian looks like he might be one of the players next year that could play on a top line and hold his own. He's been doing it for weeks now.
Yeah, he's been thriving in the role, isn't he?
He can skate. He's got skill. Of course, Chiasson looked like this earlier in the year too, right? He got hot and he got a lot of goals, and you're thinking, oh, well, maybe we have a top six. Somehow we have a top six winger here out of a guy who's never been that. And just to, I'll segue again to my bad thing right away, because my bad thing is the lack of secondary scoring on the Raiders, and Chiasson's part of it. Like, a lot of plays are dying on his stick on the second line. He's just not a top six forward, I don't think. I just don't see it. And the Oilers have some good little players, I think. I'm liking Colby Cave, continuing to like Cave. I think Kara, you know, they have some bottom six players who they can count on, I think, for next year. But, man, it's barren. Like, Brodziak is just can't – he's, you know, I've said this before, he's too slow. It's over the hill.
Different between players and scorers, isn't there? I got guys that can play down there a little bit, but almost nobody who can score.
Reader, of course, can't score anymore, and he shows no sign of being able to score. Mm-hmm. And Josh Curry shows spurts. Ty Ratty shows spurts. But they've got to get a third line, Bruce. I mean, they have this third line right now in Bakersfield. They have the top scoring line in Bakersfield of Cooper Marody, Benson, and Yamamoto.
Next year.
Maybe that's the third line next year or something like that. Because they just need an injection of youth and skill and speed in this lineup. You know, there's some people who think, well, you can't, they got to be overripe. You know, when you look at young forwards who make it in the NHL in the top six role, they're not hanging out in the NHL or the AHL for 2 or 3 years. They're coming right out of junior, or they're spending a year in the AHL. I don't know. Maybe there's some guys who spend 2 or 3 down there. But I would say when it comes to top six forwards, now the problem is that Marody, Benson, and Yamamoto may not be top six forwards in the NHL. They may not turn out to be that good of hockey players. But that's what I'm hoping to see as the Oilers' third line next year, and maybe some of those guys eventually stepping up. Maybe some of those guys, Bruce, maybe stepping up and playing in the top six next year. But I'd like to see all those guys on the team on the third line, and if they can make it higher up the roster, so much the better. But because the Oilers sure need their skill right now, they're missing it desperately.
Yeah, well, here's the problem from tonight's game, this isn't really my number, but it's related. It is numbers. Ice time for forwards: Draisaitl 26-20, McDavid 24-30. Nugent Hopkins 21-21. And then at the bottom of the order, you got Ty Ratty, 4 minutes and 54 seconds, no shots, no shot attempts. Toby Reeder, 9 minutes 23 seconds, no shots, no shot attempts. Kyle Brodziak, 8:27, no shots, no shot attempts. Josh Curry, 8:30, no shots, no shot attempts. Four guys that didn't even have a shot attempt and didn't play 10 minutes. Meanwhile, on the Toronto side of the ledger, you have not one forward that's played as much as 20 minutes. So how the hell are you going to be fresh? You know,
yeah, they have it all over the Oilers in terms of depth, and you feel it at certain times of the game. They're just getting contributions from all kinds of players, player after player, that the Oilers aren't. And it's because they've had better drafting and development the last few years than the Oilers have had.
Than ever.
And, you know, the Oilers are turning it around. It's pretty obvious, Bruce, that this is the case. I mean, what's happening in Bakersfield is a dramatic reversal for this franchise, because it's the first time any success at the AHL level has been driven by young talent. That hasn't happened before. Like, Todd Nelson had some good years down there, but none of it was driven by young talent when he went far in the playoffs. At least not the kind of young talent that we're seeing driving it right now. I mean, who are the best players, I think? Didn't his team make it to the conference finals about 2013? And their top player was Anton Lander. Mm-hmm. So, and Brandon Davidson was their top defenseman. So these were, they were older prospects. They weren't guys who are 20, 21, like Caleb Jones and the other guys. So what happened in Toronto is about to happen here. And I'm a little anxious for it, maybe for it to start happening, because I'm just tired of seeing these guys who can't play. They can't play. And that's my bad thing for tonight.
Well, here's a good thing. Bakersfield bounced back from last night's defeat to stomp San Jose 7-1 tonight.
This is Bakersfield, right? They
Yeah, they're
are a bit
rolling.
of a juggernaut team. They can score goals in bundles. They're getting good goaltending. So yeah, it's an exciting team. Did you look who scored tonight?
Well, your guys, Benson and Marody, each had a goal and assist. And it looks like the scoring is pretty well spread out through the lineup. A goal and assist for William Lagesson, who is becoming a player of more and more interest to me
He's
as the
and
season goes
again,
along.
it shouldn't take William Lagesson another year. Like, he should be NHL ready. He's not 19. Like, I
Oh, that's right.
know when we talk about the Oilers rushing players, I think what we're talking about is what happened with Puljujärvi and to some extent Yamamoto in the Shire as recently as the Chiarelli era, but did not happen with Bouchard. In that they called them up when they were 18 and they made the NHL. That's rushing players, 18, 19 in the NHL, even 20. If Benson had been rushed to the NHL this year, or Yamamoto stuck in the NHL all year, not getting
Who
any ice
didn't
time.
play tonight?
He didn't, eh? Yeah, he's been injured off and on.
I don't know why. Anyway, they really spread out the scoring. 14 different players had 1 or 2 points. Nobody had more than that. And Shane Starrett had another 27 save on 28 shot outcome. So at least there's signs of life down there. Thank heavens for that. After, I mean, last year they had nothing.
Did
Their
you hit a
top
little
six.
button that cut out your swear words there in
The
between
top,
thank and heavens?
no, I was trying to come up with a word that wasn't a swear word, and I finally came up with one. Mean, last year they had their top 10 scorers on the team, every one of them was 23 plus.
And you can't count on too much. Like, if you look, I think if you look at an AHL team historically, Bruce, I don't think you find many AHL teams that would have more than three or four solid NHL players on them at any one time. I mean, and that would be highly unusual to have that many.
Well, that'd be good. They need them.
But some of them do have about three or four. And I think the Oilers probably last had that when they had that Horkoff, Stoll, Pisani. I don't know if they're all on the same AHL team at the same time, but this is what they need to have happen next year. So Tyler Benson, Cooper Marody, William Lagesson, Caleb Jones, Kailer Yamamoto. These are that's five players. If they can get three of them, and I think that's not too much to ask, three of them to make solid contributions to the Oilers
Somewhere in the
next year.
NHL,
Yeah. Did you do your bad thing? What's your bad
Oh, my
thing?
bad thing is the inability of Edmonton to break out of their own zone. Man, it was troublesome and consistently and largely from the failure of the defense to make a decent outlet pass. God, that's just driving nuts after a while. I mean, right from the very start of the game, the puck goes into their end of second shift. Chris Russell coughs it up, and Toronto starts to pour it on. And Russell tries to get it out a second time around the boards to Cassian, and he can't get it out. Toronto pours it on again. Then Cassian can't get it out a third time. And, a minute later, and these guys, when they finally do get the puck out, they're grateful just to be able to make a line change, let alone be able to do anything on the
Okay,
counterattack.
let's go down the Oilers' defense roster, Bruce, and using the Cult of Hockey grading system, just on their outlet passes, just on puck moving in their own zone. Let's give a mark to each D-man, okay? All right. Okay, let's start with the bottom pairing, Matt Benning. What would you give him?
Probably 4 out of 10.
I'm going to give him a three. I think he's poor. What would you give to Andrei Sekera?
Oh, 6 or 7 out of 10. He's about the best we got.
I'd give him a seven. He looks back at his old self, and this is a real strength of his game. Adam Larson.
Four out of 10. Every once in a while, he surprises you with a good breakout pass, but a whole lot of them go nowhere.
Yeah. I'd like to give him a five. I'll give him a five because I'm okay. Oscar Klefbom.
5 or 6 out of 10. Like he retrieves pucks and he gets them going north, but passing, like putting the puck on the tape and hitting the guy on the fly, just sort of hit and miss.
I'm with you in between kind of a five and a six. Like, I think there is a legend of Oscar Klefbom that's kind of way hardcore that he's this kind of top NHL defenseman. And I think he's a good NHL, decent NHL top four D man. And He has moments where he's really played well, but yeah, that really great smarts, cleverness with the puck. I don't see it. I will give him. Is he above average? Yeah, he's probably above average for the NHL. So I will give him a six. Chris Russell.
Three out of 10, maybe. Like so many passes to nowhere. He just sort of lobs it into a non-dangerous area, or he punts it into the center ice zone. I call them punts when they go for field position as opposed to possession. He does that a lot. And his breakout passing, I mean, he'll make a 10-foot pass, but he won't make them 100% of the time, to say the least. And not really very creative or it doesn't sort of do anything quickly
I'll give
on
him
the
a th
counterattack.
I'm with you. I'll go somewhere between three and four. He you know the one thing you could say, extenuating circumstances, the fact that he plays on his offside, and he often is in a tough position in his own zone on the boards. So yes, where he has to make a backhand play. Darnell Nurse, I'm going to give Darnell Nurse, in terms of puck moving. Oh, and this is a weird for someone who has so many points, but I think he's a four.
That's exactly where I'd put
Yeah,
him as
like he
well.
skates it out well, but man, in terms of passing it out well and making good passing plays with the puck, just no,
Hit
it's not
and
there. So the good news, I think, is Caleb Jones has a chance to be a six or a seven.
miss.
And Evan Bouchard has a chance to be a seven or maybe even the all elusive eight in this regard.
In
So
the
they
pass
have,
department, yeah,
yeah, the passing.
they desperately need someone. I mean, in tonight's game, one of the huge differences between Edmonton and Toronto tonight was Morgan Rielly. Edmonton had nobody like Morgan Rielly in this game.
I'm at the point where like I know they need help on the wing, but with the draft pick this year, which I think will probably be in the top 10. I mean, I hope they get another puck moving defenseman, honestly. Like, until they get one on the team who's crushing it, you can't have enough of those guys. So, I mean, I'm secretly hoping they get this Byram guy now that everyone's raving about him. And obviously, that would be fantastic, but
He sure looked good in the Linka Gretzky tournament.
he did, eh? Yeah, we covered. And then there's like Petrovic, who's a three, I think. And then there's
Or
Brandon Manning,
two.
who's a two. And, Ethan Bear is probably a six.
Yeah, he was good last year moving the
It's
puck.
the one thing he's really good at. It's
He wasn't so
maybe.
good without the puck, but he was very good with the puck. But they just don't have, it's not part of their makeup. And if you look at the top teams, I mean, puck movement is such a huge part of the game anymore. And Edmonton, it seems like every game they have these long stretches where they just can't get the puck the hell over their own blue line to save their souls. And catches up
Excuse.
with you.
It's just such a killer. Such a killer. Oh, God. All right. What's your number?
Well, I got to go with nine as my number tonight, with the number of shots blocked by Chris Russell, which is
Holy
tied for
moly.
the NHL high this year. Nine shots were also blocked by Cam Fowler and by Josh Morrissey in previous games this year. And Russell's nine tonight. And several of them were what I call hero plays. And I mean that, I'm a little bit cynical when I say it, but mostly in a good way. Like he made probably one or two goal-saving plays in tonight's game. Not quite sure which ones, but where dangerous plays were broken up by him either blocking a shot or sliding to cut out a pass or something. And, more power to him for that. But the sad fact remains that even with the nine shot blocks, the Oilers were outshot 17-7 during the 15 minutes that he played at even strength. So more than a shot a minute against. And that doesn't even count all the shot blocks. Like there was 32 shot attempts against Edmonton. They were in their own end almost the whole time.
He and Nurse just do not.
I'm
We've
ready
talked
to.
about this before, right? They just don't get it done together as a pairing. They can't. Neither of them moves the puck well enough
So.
to play as much as they play.
So yeah, I had trouble grading them tonight. I wound up chickening out and giving them a five, like pluses for the hero plays and minuses for, just move the damn puck. Three giveaways he had, and if he had three good passes in this game, I might have missed him. So,
Okay, my number, Bruce, is five.
yep.
That's the number of goals that Leon Draisaitl was involved in at both ends of the ice. Now, he wasn't on the ice for Toronto's first power play goal.
Don't get
we don't disagree on this. So, I was ready to jump all over the ref on that one too. But when I watched the replay, Draisaitl hacks him at the side of the net. That's an allowed play in the NHL, but you could see the ref was like, that was borderline. It was borderline okay. And they're involved in a tough play. And then Draisaitl slashed him hard behind the leg, behind the knee. And it was that slash behind the knee.
Nylander slashed him back. I mean, that play.
Okay. Well, you want to have both guys off.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. So that's the first, and I'll give you that. We don't have a disagreement that we both agree. All right. He's involved in that goal.
And then, three times. Oh.
And he's involved in both Oilers' goals. He makes nice passes on both of them, nice plays. But Bruce, his bad line change on that second Toronto goal, come on. It leads to Chris Russell being isolated against two Leaf forwards. And, Russell could have played it better. He got beat. Yep. Definitely could have played it better. But it's still an odd man rush because of Draisaitl's bad line change. The other team has full possession of the puck and three forwards up the ice, and he decides to go off. And that was the biggest cause. Well, Russell was the biggest cause of that goal against. But Draisaitl was the second biggest cause. And I hate bad line changes.
I know you do. Second period is they're challenged to make in the second period. I don't understand why in that situation he went to the far end of the bench. Go in the short gate and have the guy jump out that much quicker. But Toronto was changing too at that time and very nearly got burned for too many men. And it was just one of those things. I'd make the slight case in his defense that when you're playing 26 minutes a night, you take your changes when you can, and unfortunately, this one was poorly timed and didn't work out. But
I have
some sympathy for those guys with a huge ice time.
Oh, you're just being entirely reasonable here, Bruce, at this point, so I'm going to have to move on. The third Toronto goal was again. Draisaitl was a major player. Came out on a line change and he gets caught flat footed. Essentially, he's the last forward back. Nugent Hopkins and Gagne are dead tired, and Draisaitl leaves it up to Nuge essentially. I mean, he's trying to make, I get it, he's trying to force the play. He's pushing the play, he wants to pick it off the puck and go score a goal. And he's you start to take chances at that point in the game. You're trying to force your way back into the game. So there's all that. Nonetheless, that was a big factor again in that goal. They get an odd man rush, and Draisaitl is the culprit on that, or he's one of them. So he was involved in every single goal one way or another, and your defense of him on the two goals is well taken. And I agree with you on that. I think that you're making good points on both parts.
He sure in the game. He sure did a lot more right than wrong, but you wouldn't know it by the goals that went in.
Yeah,
He had 12 shot attempts, 6 shots on net, and his arms must have been getting tired at one point, firing away. And I tell you what, David, for the two passes on the two goals, the pass Draisaitl made to McDavid on the Cassian chance, where he basically almost. It was a slap shot almost across the blue line right on McDavid's tape as he came flying in. I mean, you should never catch the other team on the rush on a 6-on-5, but it was such a well-executed play by those two guys. They wound up isolating the extra man alone in front of the net.
Well, the Oilers had, as you say, 14 grade A chances, Bruce. Mm-hmm. McDavid and Draisaitl were in on 10 of them. 10 out of the 14 they were in on. And so this is my thing about the secondary scoring. The other guys are just absolutely not coming close to pulling their weight in too many games. And, for the Oilers to win, their secondary scoring, these guys have got to score. These other wingers, all these other forwards combined, 10 of them have to score at least one goal, probably two. And they probably got to score about two, and it's not going to happen this year. They got to average about 1.5 per game, put it that way, and it's not going to happen this year.
Leon was involved in 8 chances tonight, and Connor on 7. So if you're saying they were in on 10, that means on a number of them, it was the two of them together that was in on it. And there was only 4 chances that neither was involved in.
Correct.
And that's not enough in a 60-minute game. It's just nowhere near.
I don't know, honestly, how Hitchcock can resist not calling up that Marody-Benson combination from the AHL right now. If I was the coach, I'd be thinking, it's such a long shot for us to win anyway. Like our chances are so small. Why not roll the dice? You know, let's go for it. Let's try to score some bloody goals here and have some offense and see how that goes. I just don't get it.
See if we That's can what I would 5-4 do. 5-4 instead of 3-2.
Exactly. You nailed it. And then with another entirely reasonable comment from Bruce McCurdy, we shall call it a night. Thanks for talking, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.